This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Heaven's Harvest. Heaven's Harvest offers a simple food plan to sustain you and your family during a crisis. Call 800-516-4773 and mention my name, Janet, to get free shipping. Or go to heavensharvest.com. That's heavensharvest.com.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thanks so much for joining us again. It was just a few weeks ago that President Obama began his reaction to the Orlando Jihad, not by blaming an Islamic terrorist, but predictably by blaming guns. Hillary Clinton followed suit, noting that the assault weapons ban should be reenacted, and she said, let's keep weapons of war off our streets like the one that was used in Orlando, even though terrorist Omar Mateen reportedly did not use a military weapon in his jihad. But it doesn't matter, because the left's goal is to disarm you, so facts and data are regularly twisted for their purposes as they studiously ignore the real evidence that refutes their arguments. And that's why I am just delighted to have with us today economist and gun expert Dr. John Lott. He has held research and teaching positions at the University of Chicago, Yale, Stanford, and also is founder of the Crime Prevention Research Center and FoxNews.com columnist as well, and is now out with a great new book we're going to be talking about. It is called The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. And it's great to talk to you again, Dr. Lott. How are you today?
Well, yeah, no, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you here. You know, I'm curious for your reaction. When you hear people like Hillary Clinton or Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin describe this jihadist as having used weapons of war and therefore we should reinstate the assault weapons ban, how do you even respond to that?
I don't know. I mean, I guess at this point it's kind of hard to expect much else from them.
Yeah.
You know, I just... And you run into this so much even with the media, too. They make these statements, reporters talk to you. It's obvious that a lot of reporters don't understand the difference between machine guns and semi-automatic guns.
Right.
And, you know, I think they go after guns right now because of how they look. So you have an AR-15, which it turns out it wasn't used in the attack there, but it seemed like they thought initially it was. And
right.
So Hillary Clinton made statements about AR-15s that look like an M-16 that's been used by the military in the United States. The thing is, the M-16 is a machine gun. It's an automatic weapon. One pull of the trigger, lots of bullets come out as long as you keep it depressed. You can have a burst mode that has three bullets come out, for example, if you pull the trigger once. But a semi-automatic gun like the AR-15 is one pull of the trigger, one bullet comes out. It automatically reloads itself, one pull of the trigger, one bullet comes out, and so on.
Yeah.
Now, if they wanted to ban all semi-automatic guns, I suppose at least it would be logical there rather than going and banning guns based on how they look on the outside. But, you know, I think they'd run into real problems. Most guns sold in the United States are semi-automatic guns. The alternative, if you were to ban semi-automatic guns, are manually loaded single-shot guns. And the thing is, there are real benefits that civilians get from having semi-automatic guns. If you have two people break into your home, do you really want to have to spend the time to manually reload the gun after you fired it once?
No.
People may not have that luxury to be able to go and do that, fumbling around for a bullet to put in the chamber or something. Is that really what people want to have done? And I think we'd have a real debate, but by kind of misinforming people about the types of weapons that are being used here, I mean, no military around the world would use, you know, an AR-15 semi-automatic gun like that.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of scare people, but it's so much of the debate. I mean, when they talk about these background checks on private transfers, or when they talk about mass public shootings in the United States compared to the rest of the world, one of the reasons why I wrote the book is that we have so much of the debate going on this year on these very questions. I wanted to make sure people kind of understood the actual facts here.
Yes, exactly right. Well, I thought it was very interesting because one of the things you say in the book is when you were at University of Chicago Law School, Obama was there as a lecturer, and he apparently told you, I don't believe that people should be able to own guns, just flat out. And yet he was the one in 2008. You can go back and look at the videos where he was laughing before the crowds and, oh, I'm not going to take your guns. Oh, I'm a Second Amendment guy. I mean, what do you think of his progress so far toward, you know, eradicating the Second Amendment or at least compromising it beyond what the founders would have put up with?
Well, I mean, obviously, without Congress, he can't just take away people's guns himself directly. But what he can do is appoint federal judges. And if you look at the two people he's appointed to the Supreme Court, neither one of them believe that people have a right to self-defense, let alone right to self-defense with a gun. Mm-hmm. And Hillary Clinton will play into this, too. She's promised multiple times during her presidential campaign that she will overturn the Heller and McDonald decisions. Now, for people who don't know what those are, the Heller decision was a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that struck down Washington, D.C.'s ban on handguns. They said it was unconstitutional to ban all handguns. And the McDonald decision struck down Chicago's gun ban.
Yes.
So when she says that she wants to overturn these decisions, these were narrow 5-4 decisions that only said that the government cannot ban either all handguns or all guns. So if she overturns those, then governments, local governments like D.C. or state governments, you know, maybe California with the way they're going on the gun control issues, could go and ban all handguns.
Yeah.
And or all guns. And so, you know, she can go and say that she doesn't want to, you know, limit the Second Amendment. But if you say that government can completely ban guns, I'm not really sure what's left for the Second Amendment.
Yeah, that's the scary part. Well, you even say, you know, we've had such a ramping up of this gun control, you know, rhetoric, and the things that they've done really have been quite unthinkable. If you go back a few years ago, nobody would have imagined some of the things. What would you say are some of the most egregious examples of unthinkable things that they're doing regarding the Second Amendment?
Well, maybe before we get into the specific examples, just, you know, in terms of policy, just so people kind of understand how the debate has changed over the last 5 or 6 years, you know, at that time, it was pretty much a legislative battle that was going on. Now you have people like Bloomberg and George Soros who are spending literally hundreds of millions of dollars on financing research. You know, when they put out these studies, they literally get thousands of news stories around the country that uncritically parrot what they find, you know, despite the errors that get pointed out time after time in these studies.
Mm-hmm.
Bloomberg has worked out something with the Columbia Journalism School where and they brought in reporters from around the country to go and listen to experts that Bloomberg has helped put together to go and teach reporters how to cover gun issues the way that Bloomberg thinks that they should be covered. I mean, can you imagine the NRA having a relationship with the Columbia Journalism School where they would bring in reporters so that they could be taught how the NRA thinks that they should go and cover those issues?
No way.
Or the NRA funding research studies so that and that the reporters wouldn't even cover them.
No.
If the NRA funded research studies.
No.
And that's not all of it. I mean, there's been a huge amount of money spent on advertising. The gun control side in 2013 and 2014, the last numbers I've seen, have outspent the other side by 14-fold on television advertising. And, you know, let alone all the free time that they get. And it's been amazing. I talk about this also in the book, The War on Guns, about how the media generally lets them manipulate the news coverage. I've gotten called in to do television news shows where I've been told that I will be debating people from Bloomberg's group. And when I'm driving into the studio at CNN or what have you, I'll get a call saying, well, the Bloomberg people don't want to debate you. You know, we'll either have the mom by themselves, or can you suggest somebody else that has the same views that you do?
Unbelievable. Yeah, no. Well, I can imagine why they don't want to go up against you. But we're going to come back right after this break. Dr. John Lott, The War on Guns, his new book. We'll come back right after this. This is Johnny Erickson Tata, and like you, I love to hear success stories. And if you're an employer, this is really meant for you. Because Tim is part of a residential community that provides training for employment. Because of his training, he was able to get a job at a local restaurant. The manager reported that Tim, with Down syndrome, is never late and is always willing to work. Even though he does dishes 40 hours a week, he still asks to do dishes on Saturdays. That kind of dedication has landed him the position of senior dishwasher on the day shift. And Tim's positive go-getter attitude has made him a favorite with all the staff. You know, Tim may never climb the Wall Street ladder or graduate from the Harvard School of Business, but Tim, with his Down syndrome, is a very successful man and definitely a valuable employee. Persons with disabilities have much to offer in the workplace. Learn about it at disabilitycampaign.org.
Did Noah have the same animals? This is Ken Ham, and our full-size Noah's Ark is now open near Cincinnati. Illustrations of the Ark usually include animals we'd see today, like lions, tigers, and horses. But what did the animals on the Ark actually look like? Well, Genesis says God created animals to reproduce according to their kind. Now, that's not the same thing as species. According to research, it's usually at the family level in modern classification. So Noah didn't have to take two lions and two tigers onto the ark. He only had to take two of every kind. So two of the cat kind, two of the dog kind, two of the horse kind. Only about 2,000 different kinds. God created every kind with incredible variety in their DNA.
Visit AnswersRadio.com to learn more about Noah's Ark and the flood. You can also plan your visit to our full-size Ark in Kentucky. It's at AnswersRadio.com.
We are back on Janet Mefford today, talking with Dr. John Lott, founder of the Crime Prevention Research Center, and he is out with a great new book, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. And there's certainly tons of those floating around all the time and pushed out by the media. And that was incredible what you were saying, Dr. Lott, before the break, that you know, going to an interview at CNN or wherever you're going and being told, oh, the Bloomberg people don't want to debate you. Well, why would they want to debate you? They would be really in trouble if they debated you on the statistics and the data.
Yeah, well, you know, I've had a number of similar cases. There are two cases that I mentioned in the book where they weren't able to actually control it completely. One was at C-SPAN, Washington Journal, last year, where the Bloomberg people, their research director, had agreed to be on Washington Journal for an hour. And then Washington Journal people asked me if I'd be on. I said, sure. When they informed the Bloomberg people that I was going to be on, they, first of all, asked that I not be included. The C-SPAN people said, well, we've already invited them. Then the Bloomberg people said that they could not appear that morning, thinking, I guess, that they would just cancel the segment. But instead, the C-SPAN people said, well, you know, we'll still go ahead with it. You know, we'll have Lott on. And so then they found out that they could do it. But they insisted that I be on for a half hour. This is Bloomberg people basically dictating the terms, saying that I was on first for a half hour, and then the Bloomberg person would be on after me, after he had been able to listen to what I had to say. And the producer at C-SPAN was sufficiently kind of irked by this behavior, which they get away with at a lot of places, said to me, she actually encouraged me to bring this up in my half hour. And so I did. And And then the first questioner for the Bloomberg person was actually somebody who was asking why the guy was refusing to debate. You know, and so, I mean, that producer was actually fairly brave, I think, to go. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't by accident that the first caller selected was the one who made that point.
Right.
And a second case where they tried to do it and they failed was my son was a producer for John Stossel's show. They had wanted to have a debate on some of Bloomberg's claims about gun safety type regulations. And so my son had set up a debate between myself and the Bloomberg people, but as soon as they found out that I was doing it, then they tried to ask that only they be on. And of course, my son wasn't going to do that. He said, you know, he thought people would learn more from having both sides be able to talk to each other. They refused to appear. They did send in responses because they asked to know in advance what questions would be raised. And then they wrote up responses, which were read by John Stossel. But, you know, it's just crazy what they think they, and they get away with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even imagine going on a show on CNN or something like that and insisting that I have control over who I get to debate on the other side.
No. And no self-respecting journalist would ever accept the terms of the people who are being interviewed. That's not how it's supposed to work. It's especially in a debate scenario. You just don't put up with that. You'd get another guest if somebody's going to act that way. But that, I mean, that really proves the collusion that the media has with the left when it comes to gun control and advancing these lies. And there's so many of them. Where do you even begin? When you talk, for example, about background checks and gun registration and these sorts of things, which have been bandied about recently, how do you refute that in the best way to explain to people, look, that's not going to make you any safer. These background checks, you know, this stuff the left is saying is just not what you think it is.
Great. Well, we have, two chapters in the book that deal with different aspects of these background checks. One is the impact it has on crime rates and mass public shootings, because after each of these mass public shootings, President Obama has called for these background checks on private transfers even before we know any of the facts about the cases. You know, it turns out there's not one single mass public shooting during his administration or years before that would have been stopped if these laws had been on the books. I wish one time one of these reporters, when the president brings this up, would say, okay, can you point to just one case where these laws would have made a difference? What's left out of these discussions about these background checks are the costs for these rules. And that is, just last week, Hillary Clinton was talking about the 2.4 million prohibited or dangerous people that she claims have been stopped from buying guns because of background checks. That's simply a lie. That what she should say is that there have been 2.4 million initial denials, and that virtually all of those are the wrong people being stopped.
Oh, wow.
That law-abiding citizens who should have been able to go and buy guns but were stopped simply because they had a name similar to somebody that the government wanted to stop. It's one thing to stop a felon from buying a gun. It's another thing to stop somebody simply because they have a name similar to a felon. And about 99% of those 2.4 million initial denials, they stopped somebody who should have been able to legally buy a gun. Now, you know, at the simplest level, it's just point out that some small but significant portion of those 2.4 million people may have really needed a gun quickly for self-defense and were stopped. But it's deeper than that. This is really racist, the way these background checks work, and the Democrats refuse to do anything to try to fix these things. The problem here is that people tend to have names similar to others in their racial group. So Hispanics have names similar to other Hispanics. Blacks tend to have names similar to other blacks. 30% of black males in the United States have a criminal background that legally prevents them from owning a gun. Well, who are they most likely to get their names confused with other people? It's not with Asians, for example.
Yeah.
It's going to be most likely with other blacks. And so you have a law-abiding, good black male who's trying to buy a gun but is stopped simply because he has a name similar to somebody else, you know, one of these 30% of black males who who is legally forbidden from owning a gun.
Wow.
Now, you know, and the same thing is true, though, to a somewhat lesser extent among Hispanics. The problem is, I mean, that's bad enough. But at least under the Clinton and Bush administrations, the government would eventually go back, double-check these things, realize that they had made a mistake, and, you know, let the person know that they had made a mistake. The problem is now Obama has removed every last person from double-checking these things. There's no longer a single person in the Justice Department who's tasked with rectifying these mistakes. And so now you can go do an appeal. My guess is most people are not capable of properly filling out the forms and following the process to do it, and so they go and hire a lawyer to do it. But the problem is that costs thousands of dollars.
Right.
And the very people that you end up having happen, you know, stop from doing this are law-abiding citizens, law-abiding black males or Hispanics who can't afford, you know, in poor areas. The people who are most likely to be victims of crime, who can't afford thousands of dollars to fix the problems that the government created there. But it's even more than that. You know, when President Obama talks about these background checks on private transfers, you know, you don't see the cost when you buy a new gun of these background checks because it's in the price of the gun. It's not like a sales tax that they tack on top of it. But when you go through a background check just to transfer a gun, you see the cost because that's the only thing they're providing there.
Right.
And in Washington, D.C., it adds $125 under the cost of a gun to transfer it. Now, that may not stop you or I from getting a gun, but the very people who need this the most, poor blacks who live in high crime areas in D.C., that may make the difference between whether or not they're able to legally buy a gun to protect themselves and their families. You know, in some states it's cheaper. In Oregon, you can get it for as low as $55. And in Colorado, it's $60. But you get some idea what's motivating gun control advocates. I have a couple examples in the war on guns. I'll just give you one.
Sure.
And that is in Colorado in 2013, when they were passing this background checks on private transfers, there was, I had talked to some state legislators there, and I had the idea of putting up an amendment that would exempt people below the poverty level from having to pay the new state tax that they have there on transferring guns. Well, with the exception of two pro-gun Democrats in the state house there, all the other Democrats voted against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay this new tax. I mean, how many taxes can you point to where Democrats will vote virtually unanimously or unanimously against exempting people below the poverty level from having to pay them?
Wow.
You just can't find them.
Yeah.
And I think it goes to the point here that they're more intent on stopping people from being able to go and buy guns, and they aren't even getting these things passed. If there are a few simple changes that they could make, one would be pay for these background checks out of general revenue. As an economist, look, I don't believe that these background checks lower crime rates, but let's say it's true. Let's say it's true what they're claiming. Who should pay for them then? Should you tax just the person who's buying the gun to pay for the whole cost? No, as an economist, I would say the people who benefit should be the ones who pay. So pay for it out of general revenue. If you bring that up to Democrats or gun control activists, they will go nuts on you.
Yeah.
To even suggest something like that. They want, just like not willing to exempt people below the poverty level from paying the state tax there, they want the gun owners to have to pay these costs because they want to use this as a way of reducing gun ownership.
Incredible. Well, the great book, The War on Guns, out now from Dr. John Lott. Thank you so much, Dr. Lott, for being with us. And we'll be back right after this.